Did you hear about the 160 Palestinian children who died building the terror tunnels in Gaza? Oh, you didn't? I bet there's a lot more you haven't heard.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Oh, you are tuned in to the right place today for cutting-edge news, and I trust a perspective that will be helpful, edifying, truthful, and compassionate. Michael Brown, welcome to the Line of Fire. Here's the number to call, but I'm putting a specific restriction on calls today. I'm only taking calls from those who differ with my position, all right? I'm only taking calls today from those who differ with my position. If you stand against Israel's war with Hamas, if you feel that Israel is guilty of genocide or ethnic cleansing or war crimes, if you believe that the Jewish people have no right to the land today, if you believe that they're not even truly Jews, any of those positions, you are welcome to call. Because I am utterly convinced that Hamas is the problem, that the Palestinian people are suffering because of Hamas, and that Israel is doing its utmost to avoid civilian casualties, and that the great suffering and hardship of the people, even the deprivation in which they live, is because of Hamas, and Israel would like nothing more than for the Palestinians living in Gaza to be happy and satisfied and peaceful neighbors and friends. 866-34-TRUTH. So I only want to take calls today from those who differ with my stance. If you're not clear on what my stance is, keep listening and it will become clear. In case you did not hear this news, at least four people were killed, several others seriously wounded, reading from a report in Jerusalem Post now, in the Eshkol regional, in a mortar attack in Eshkol. This is next to the Gaza border. So at least four Israeli killed, several others seriously wounded. This was supposed to be towards the end of a ceasefire period. These are allegedly the weapons that are just firecrackers that can't hurt anybody. And four Israelis killed and others seriously wounded in this attack. Now, here is the great problem, the great, terrible, difficult issue. Yes, there is good evidence that Hamas is inflating the number of civilian casualties. Yes, I believe that Hamas is responsible for the civilian casualties because of their bombing Israel from civilian areas. They're hiding rockets in schools. They're taking over hospitals and bombing from there. They're using houses as entrances to terror tunnels where they had a massive plan to kill, kidnap as many Israelis as possible at the time of the Jewish holy days in September, according to what we have been told. But regardless of Hamas's guilt and regardless of inflated casualties, if you take the amount of Palestinians killed in Gaza since Operation Protective Edge, since Israel's counteroffensive against Hamas, if you take that and calculate the population of Gaza compared to America, hear me, this is staggering. It would be the equivalent of roughly 120,000 Americans killed in a period of just a few weeks. This is the great humanitarian crisis. This is the great agonizing situation. But I want to repeat, Israel is not the villain in this. If you differ with me, the phone lines are open, but only for those who differ. I will treat you respectfully. Even if you're mad at me, I'll treat you respectfully. 866-348-7884.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. I do have a bunch of audio clips that I do want to play for you today, and they will be quite eye-opening as we go on. And again, I'm taking calls from those who differ with my position on Israel. I'm taking calls from those who differ with my position on Israel's right to be in the land or Israel's actions in the midst of the conflict. Again, number to call, 866-348-7884. All right. Over the weekend, reports surfaced, and they link then to a Journal of Palestine Studies. This is an academic journal, and it would be pro-Palestinian in its approach. In other words, this is not a Zionist sympathizing journal. And it mentioned that in the building of the terror tunnels, and according to some Hamas leaders, Israel's only uncovered a fraction of them, which would be all the more shocking. According to this journal, again, this is a pro-Palestinian journal, in the building of these terror tunnels, Hamas officials said 160 children were killed in the building of them. The story mentioned that just like in Victorian England, that the children were prized because of their flexible, small bodies. And 160 children died in the building of these tunnels. So just a word about these tunnels. Let's go to clip number 20.
Construction materials meant for Palestinians routinely enter Gaza from Israel during peacetime. Since the beginning of 2014, 4,680 trucks carrying 181,000 tons of gravel, iron, cement, wood, and other supplies have passed through the Kerem Shalom crossing. Hamas exploits these supplies and invests significant efforts in building underground tunnels. These tunnels allow terrorists to smuggle weapons and equipment. They also enable Hamas to operate underground and infiltrate Israel in order to kidnap and kill civilians. To build one 3-kilometer tunnel, Hamas needs 350 trucks and 1,800 tons of concrete. Imagine what Hamas could build with these resources instead of tunnels. Hundreds of homes and civilian institutions for the people of Gaza.
Right. The problem is resources have poured in. Resources have poured into Gaza for years and years, and they are misused. The people, many of the people live in poverty and squalor, and yet God knows how many millions of dollars of international aid pour in. Tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars over the years pour in to so-called West Bank, Judea, Samaria, and to Gaza. Where has the money gone? There's documentation of Hamas millionaires, and we know about the tunnel. Who's paying for all the weapons? Where are all these weapons coming from? All the constant bombing. Where are the rockets coming from? The rocket launchers in so many different sites. Do you understand that if Israel's goal was to kill civilians with the firepower they have and the technology they have and the close quarters, the highly densely populated region that this is, Israel could destroy all of Gaza overnight, in a matter of minutes. It'd be rampant, horrific destruction. That is not the goal. However, Israel will not allow itself to be fired upon day and night by a group that is in no way wanting to be peace partners with Israel. Instead, they clearly and categorically say that they are set on Israel's destruction. In fact, I'm just looking at a quote here. Hamas's foreign minister, Mahmoud al-Zahar, said, "Israel is a vile entity that has been planted on our soil and has no historical, religious, or cultural legitimacy. We cannot normalize our relations with this entity. We say no to recognizing Israel, regardless of the price we have to pay for a refusal." Now, listen, that report I mentioned about the terror tunnels and the concrete, the steel, other resources being used. That's supposed to be used to build better housing for the people of Gaza. Instead, it's used to build terror tunnels to infiltrate Israel or to get into Egypt to get arms brought in. You say, well, that's because of the blockade. No, the blockade is because of Hamas. There was not a blockade before Hamas began to attack. This is not a potential peace partner, aside from them having a change in faith and heart and becoming new people and no longer being Hamas. These are simple facts. It is horrific. It is absolutely horrific that there are so many deaths. It is terribly painful to think about. You say, but what about that massacre where Israel just bombed that school with the children in it? Israel absolutely says it is not responsible for that. Israel absolutely said they gave clear windows of time for the school to be evacuated. Israel claims that they responded to fire in that area and shot back, but they absolutely are sure that they did not bomb a school with children in it. Now, Israel has misfired before. A rocket, a missile has gone off target, and they have explicitly said, we blew it. And they grieve over it, and their national increase over this. But Israel says that the UN is giving out misleading information and that it still remains possible that any casualties there are the result of Hamas rocket that didn't land in the right place. Everyone says, well, they're not sophisticated and they don't have GPS and they're just little firecrackers, which is completely bogus. Wait for those little firecrackers to rain in on your parade. Wait for those little firecrackers to rain in on your backyard. Wait for those little firecrackers to terrorize your own children and to demolish homes and buildings. Just wait for that. And to maim your kids. Oh, and don't forget, if Israel didn't put up a security barrier on their other border, that they would not have so effectively reduced the murderers coming into Israel. Are all Palestinians murderers? God forbid. There are plenty of citizens in Gaza who are absolutely fed up with Hamas, but they dare not say it. I remember being in an airport flying overseas many years ago, JFK in New York, talking to a couple. The man was from Syria. And I asked him, you know, how do you like living in Syria? And he gave me with a smile a totally politically correct answer, letting me know we don't dare answer that question in any negative way. There are people in Gaza saying, look, we got our food from Israel and Hamas repays them with rockets. We hate them, but we can't talk about them. And even then you get to quote with first name only and the person is risking his life in sharing it. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to the phones, starting with Al in Brooklyn. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well.
How are you doing today?
Thank you. I'm doing very well.
You know, here's what I disagree with. I disagree with the twisted history of that part of the world they call the Middle East, Israel-Palestine. First of all, in 1946, the Jewish population was only 30% of that land. Then in 1948, it became a much larger number. Now, it became like 82%. Now, you tell me, how is that possible without expelling people who were there prior to the population shift?
Oh, it's really easy. The Israelis asked them to stay. The Arab leadership told them to leave, and they fled. The Arab leadership started the war. Remember that the League of Nations presented a partition plan that would give the great majority of land to the Arabs who lived there, who were the majority. And this was 20, 30 years before Israel became a state. And the Arab leadership said no. Then the UN offered another partition plan in 1947. The Jews accepted it reluctantly. I mean, the boundaries weren't the best. They accepted it. The Arab leadership said no and declared war and said, we will annihilate you. David Ben-Gurion, Golda Meir said, stay, you are neighbors. There's plenty of room in the land for both of us. The Arab leadership said, no, we will drive you into the sea. And they warned their people living there, get out. So the first ones to flee, and the Arab press criticized them at that time, they fled on their own accord because there was now war going on. Those were the richer citizens that lived there. Then there are others that were driven out because of war, but Israel was fighting for its survival. There were 800,000 refugees. There were 800,000 refugees that were expelled from Muslim countries, Jewish refugees that the Jews took in, and the Arab refugees were largely not received by their countries. But the Arab leadership said that the canon can't distinguish between an Arab and a Jew. So get out. Once we destroy the Jews, a few weeks later, come back to your homes. Well, that didn't happen. So whose fault is the refugee crisis? The Arab leadership, they've hurt their own people.
Well, I beg to differ. I think the fault is first with the UN and second with groups like the Irgun that was ran by people like Mahatma Begin, who himself declared himself to be a terrorist of the world and who was part and parcel of blowing up the King David Hotel. The Arabs left because they were being terrorized by groups like that whose intention was to run them out of there so they could make space for the incoming
Europeans. Yeah, all right. Al, stay right there. Let's continue this discussion on the other side of the break.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Occupation is a crime.
Occupation is a crime.
Killing babies is a crime.
Killing babies is a crime.
Apartheid is a crime.
Apartheid is a crime.
Genocide is a crime.
Genocide is a crime.
Free, free Palestine.
Free, free Palestine.
Yeah, that was from Miami. That was an anti-Israel rally in Miami. Alan Brooklyn, are you still there, sir?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, and listen, I appreciate the opportunity to discuss these things. I want to catch up to the present in a moment, but let me just respond to what you said, then back to you. Let's understand that the first bloodshed was carried out in the 20s and 30s as Jews were massacred under the incitement of Haji Amin al-Husseini, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, who became a friend and confidant of Adolf Hitler. Let's remember that started a lot of the bloodshed. Let's also remember that Jews who were being slaughtered in Europe when they were trying to flee and come to Palestine, they were not allowed in. So as people like Begin are watching the decimation, the wholesale slaughter of men, women, and children. Look, every casualty, every child that dies in Gaza or anywhere, that's a tragedy, regardless of who's responsible. It's a tragedy. We should all mourn for it. Let's remember, a million and a half Jewish kids were slaughtered in cold blood in Nazi Europe, and Jews trying to flee to Palestine were blocked. So that fueled some of the fire against the British to try to break the hold. But if you take the bombing of the King David Hotel, they sent notices to everyone to say, get out. We don't want anyone hurt. Whereas, for example, Hamas is saying there will be more suicide bombers. We will bomb your buses. They celebrate when children are killed. So here's what we do know, though. The Arab leadership refused offers for two states with a majority Arab population 20 or 30 years before 1947, then they refused the partition plan. Why is that Israel's fault? And then what happened to the 200,000 Arabs that stayed in Israel? They're 1.5 million strong today, sir. Why? Because they're not trying to murder the Jews. And they vote. They have a substantial representation in parliament. They're not required to fight in the military, yet the military protects them. They have a member of the Supreme Court. They occupy major positions in many aspects of the Israeli society, and they do not want to be under the government of the Palestinian Authority or Hamas. So what does that tell you? It tells you that if you're not trying to kill the Jews there, that Israel will treat you fairly.
Well, sir, I just want to make one thing clear. I'm in no way anti anybody. That's to include the Jews. As a matter of fact, just to put it out there, I'm not too in favor of Islam and Palestinian so-called resistance. I understand why they do what they do, but I don't necessarily agree with it. I have an imam in my family, and because he's an imam, we are estranged because I'm a Christian myself, and I mm-hmm. don't see Islam as the way. But I like to think that I see things fairly, and I agree with you about the 21 massacres and stuff like that. But this has been going on for a while between the two groups. But to always say that there's always one group that's wrong and one group that's morally right, I think is a falsity that's being put on by people. And I think if we truthfully are serving God as individuals and we want to see what's right, we have to see it fairly. And both sides have a lot to give in this, and not just the Palestinians. Since we're going to come to the president, I just want to hit on the past real quick. The European people that were slaughtered in Europe are what they call Ashkenazi. If you study the scriptures, the same Jewish scriptures, it will show you in Genesis chapter 10, Ashkenazi was the grandson of Japhet, which is one of the three sons of Noah.
No, just hang on, because I'm short on time, and I want to try to get to some other calls. Are you saying they weren't really Israelites or Jews? Is that your point?
Oh, of course not. How could they be? They adapted the religion in the 10th century.
Yeah.
They adapted
they're not
descended from that part of the world.
Let me just give you a word of wisdom. Al. Sometimes people get upset with me for muting them. I am not going to tolerate two voices talking at the same time on the radio when I'm trying to make a point. I did give you ample time. Al, I was totally with you on saying that there has to be a moral standard held for all parties involved. I'm totally with you on that. Israel is not blameless, but I will say it plainly. Israel does not intentionally kill civilians. Hamas does. Israel would like to live in peace with the Palestinians. Hamas wants the annihilation of Israel. That's undeniable. The Arabs that chose to stay in the land, they have been thriving. Those that fled are victims of bad leadership. That being said, the Khazars, those who converted to Judaism, the Khazars in the 10th century represent a tiny, tiny percentage of the overall Jewish population. And yes, there is intermarriage for sure, but these were Jews and their ancestry could be traced back for many generations in many cases. And sir, I just want to be candid with you. You speak as a brother in the Lord, so I just want to be candid with you, all right? To be perfectly plain, when you talk about these things and the Jews who were slaughtered in Europe were not really Jews, it discredits everything else that you say. We were having a good, worthy discussion up to that point, but really check your sources more, because that's just another anti-Semitic lie that has circulated for centuries. And by the way, the devil knew who he was after. Maybe we can chat face-to-face if I'm ever in the city, but thank you for the call in Brooklyn, I mean. All right, changing gears here for a moment. Dennis, get clip number one ready. We have a tremendous resource this week. A lot of people are really excited. It's an amazing DVD called Such Were Some of You. Let me just play a clip from it. Clip number one.
He doesn't say, this is what some of you used to do, but this is what some of you were. And you're not like that anymore. You are changed, you are transformed, you've been sanctified, set apart to God as holy and washed.
What he's saying is not that the moment the believers at Corinth became believers, they lost all desires, all innate urges to do what God expressly forbids. That's not what Paul is saying. But what he is saying is that their lives have been transformed because they've been brought under the controlling influence of the Spirit of Jesus Christ that indwells them.
Yeah, one more clip. This is from a DVD, Such Were Some of You. I'm on that. That was Professor Robert Gagnon, the foremost authority on the Bible and homosexuality that you also heard. Let me just play out. Not going to have time. We'll play more clips over the week. This is a great DVD with testimonies of many who've come out of homosexuality. Great for you to watch if you struggle or have any family members that do. When you order it, we're giving you free with it my DVD debate with Rabbi Shmuley Boteach, Is Homosexuality America's Greatest Moral Crisis? Just $20 postage paid for both DVDs. Call now 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Once more, 1-800-278-9978. Or just right on the homepage, my website, AskDrBrown.org. Check out my latest article while you're on the website.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It's taking place in Miami. Scenes of thousands and thousands of Palestinians and their supporters marching in Chicago, against Israel. Riots in Paris. Jews attacked. Synagogues attacked. Large rallies in London with threatening words spoken. This is an all-out spiritual attack. Oh, it has its natural manifestations, but behind it, ultimately, is satanic Jew hatred. I plan to have an article out in the next day or two explaining that there's often a fine line between being anti-Zionist and anti-Semitic. 866-34-TRUTH. I'm only taking calls today from people who differ with me. And by the way, we pay for the airtime. I am not paid by someone like Rush Limbaugh or some other famous host where I am paid to be on the air. No, we pay the stations to be on the air, which means that I'm saying, here's my airtime for you to come on and differ with me. Before I get back to the phones, let's listen to anti-Israel protesters in Toronto. And let me just say this first. I absolutely say that Israel should be criticized when guilty. I absolutely say that Israel is far, far, far from a perfect nation. I absolutely say that you can not believe that Israel today is the fulfillment of prophecy. You can not be Zionistic, and you can criticize Israel without being anti-Semitic. I'm simply saying there's a very fine line between the two that quickly gets crossed when Israel does something perceived as wrong. Before we play clip number 16, let me just say this. Israel is now sending out warnings. They have sent out warnings, messages to thousands of Palestinian Arabs living near Gaza. I'm reading a report from Gila Ronain, and shortly after mortar shell killed at least four people in Israel, phone calls were made. This is the army saying, a short while ago, phone calls were made and text messages were sent out to the civilian population of Shejaia, Zaytun, and eastern Jabalia, calling them to evacuate immediately towards central Gaza City. Why? Because it means there's probably a large attack coming, a large strike coming in retaliation for the attack on the Israelis. And this is obviously the area that it came from. This is what Israel does in the midst of war. However, many people are not happy with that. It's just not fair. This is from Toronto, clip number 16.
Do you think that Israel has the right to defend itself when that occurs?
They're not defending themselves. They've been stealing people's land since 1946.
Well, Israel, Gaza has been under siege for a really, really long time. And I feel that it is self-defense for them if they fire a few rockets. But Israel has been killing people every day for a longer time than they have been firing back. So I feel like Hamas actually has the right to defend itself.
They do have the ability to get like missiles and to get an army, whereas Palestine has limited access to these things. So it's kind of like a little person against a big person. So in that sense, it's not fair.
Not fair. Not fair. The intruder broke into the home only with a steak knife and a baseball bat, managed to kill one of your children and wound the other. You had massive weaponry. You were well-armed. You're a police officer. And you got the intruder and shot him to death. Well, it was hardly fair. You only had was a steak knife and a baseball bat. You had a gun, and a big gun at that, high-powered. It was hardly fair. That's kind of nonsense we're hearing. By the way, that report goes back 2 years, November of 2012. That's where hostilities are. And before that, for years and years.
Fire we want, for fire we please. Send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Do you think that Israel has the right to defend itself?
Israel has also been blocking essential. Israel has been blocking essential medicines from entering Palestine. Has been blocking staples like chocolates. Has been blocking things like tools to repair the sewers that Israel bombed out in 2008. The United States and Israel refused to send those vital things and other medicines into Gaza. So when we talk about does Israel have the right to reply to a few firecrackers thrown at it?
These rockets don't actually have firepower.
They're rockets.
They are rockets. Yes, they have flight capability, but they don't have firepower to the same extent as phosphorus bombs that are being dropped on Gaza every single day.
I mean, the logic is remarkable. This is a couple of years back when Israel was engaged in Operation Pillar of Defense, October 2012, and there's a protest in Toronto. It's just firecrackers. It's firecrackers. Oh, that's why the Israelis run to bomb shelters. That's why people have been killed. That's why 4 people were killed today. Just firecrackers. And let me ask you a question. If your next-door neighbor with whom you tried to make peace, and by the way, constantly tried to help in times of need, and we're always saying, hey, your kid's sick, let me get them to the doctor. Hey, let's get medical supplies over to you. And you respond by constantly throwing rocks, big rocks, small rocks at the house. You break my windows. You hit my kids in the head when they're in the yard. One time you killed one of them. And you do that day and night. And finally, I say, all right, clear out. We are coming in to get the person guilty of this. And you start then throwing knives at us, and we start shooting. And you got kids in the next room that we told you to get out. You are the one responsible. That's the situation with Hamas. Let me say it again. The Palestinian people are victims of Hamas, and there is ongoing waning support. I do want to get to the calls, but then I want you to hear from the son of a former Hamas leader. And hear what he has to say about this. Let's go to Edmonton, Alberta. Brian, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. I just want to start by saying that I really appreciate your ministry. It's been a real big blessing to me personally. I myself am an ex-Jehovah's Witness, and so listening to your radio program sometimes is very upbuilding for me.
Excellent. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah. So, but what I do have a problem with at times is kind of the concept of Zionism and the fact that, you know, when I look at Scripture and I read the New Testament, I see there's only one people. I see that there is one chosen nation that God is using today on the earth. And I see that as a church, how God brought the mystery of the gospel, both Jew and Gentile, together under one branch. So I don't necessarily disagree with you politically. I think that Israel has every right to defend itself, right?
Yep.
But theologically, I feel like there's something that is incorrect on the issue of Zionism.
All right, so let me ask you this, and thanks for that question. Later in the week, as early as tomorrow, otherwise on Thursday, I'm going to once again revisit some of the theological questions. I'm going to interact with John Piper and R.C. Sproul, articles that they've written in the past that address these who is Israel issues. But let me just ask you this first. What do you think Paul means when he's talking about Israel in Romans 11:28, and he's talking about those who are not believers in Jesus? As regards the gospel, they are enemies for your sake, but as regards election, they are beloved for the sake of their forefathers, for the gifts and the calling of God are irrevocable, for just as you were one time disobedient to God, but now have received mercy because of their disobedience, so they too have now been disobedient in order that they, that by the mercy shown to you, they also may receive mercy. So he's talking about those who are not believers and saying, even though they're enemies of the gospel for your sake, as regards election, calling, they're beloved for the sake of their forefathers, because God made unconditional promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, for the gifts and calling of God are irrevocable. So how do you understand that passage, Brian?
Sure. I think when I see Romans chapter 11, I see Paul kind of starts off that chapter saying, you know, has God rejected his people? He says, absolutely not. And so what I see is that there is an ingrafting of both Jews and Gentiles coming into one nation into one spiritual body, an ecclesia, coming together. So in that sense, God's calling is irrevocable because the church is made up of both Jew and Gentile. So God hasn't rejected his people because the church is made up of Jews also, right?
Right, right. But he's talking about the opposite there. He's talking about the ones who don't believe, who he says all Israel will be saved at the end, and that God has that God's promises. In other words, God is still looking at non-believing Israel as his people. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, he'd be guilty of breaking his promise.
Yeah, I think that God sees Israel as his people in the context of the church. I do see, however, because when you look at modern-day Israel, a Jew who dies in the modern day of Israel, apart from Christ, will go to hell. They are not saved.
Correct. Correct.
And so in regard to that, they are not a saved people. The church is a saved people.
But hang on, we didn't say saved. We said chosen. In other words, are they still chosen by God? And does God still look at them as a chosen people?
I think in a certain context, yes. When I look at at the end times of things, Scripture says that all Israel will be saved at the end of times, right? So I do definitely see that Israel will be saved at the end. But for an unbelieving Jew who dies apart from Christ, he's no different from the Gentile who dies apart from Christ.
No, but that's a separate thing from, in other words, when God said, I will scatter you to the whole world, who's he talking about? Mm-hmm. Physical Israel. Then he says, I'll regather you in my mercy, not because of your good works, but because my name is blasphemed. Who's he talking about? Physical Israel. And then when he says, I'll sprinkle clean water on you once you're back in the land, who's he talking about? Physical Israel. So I'll tell you what, Brian, since the focus here is more theological than political, and it's a fair discussion to have, do you have my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood?
I don't have that one.
All right, stay right there. Dwight's going to get your contact info, and it's on your way as my gift to you. All right? And remember, Paul gives warnings in Romans 11. It says, don't boast against the branches. In other words, don't think, well, God's done with them, which Brian was not saying. God's done with them because he's made promises to us. Therefore, he's done with them. Gentile believers say that. Let's just play some clips from Mossab Hassan Youssef, the son of a Hamas leader who is now a follower of Jesus. Dennis, let's start with clip number 13. This is Mossab Hassan Youssef in a CNN interview with Don Lemon. Clip number 13.
Hamas does not care about the lives of Palestinians, does not care about the lives of Israelis or Americans. Mm-hmm. They don't care about their own lives. They consider dying for the sake of their ideology a way of worship.
Did you get that? Very, very important for the radical Islamic mentality to be understood. And it's not that they're not fellow human beings. Of course they're fellow human beings to be cared for whom Jesus died. I have a greater burden for the Muslim world than many other parts of the world. They're all important, but you can't have an equal burden and effort to everyone. Muslims are high on my list of people that I want to see God reach with the saving message of Jesus. But let's just understand, one of the great problems is that fatalistic, demonic ideology. Let's listen to more of the interview, clip number 14.
Hamas is not seeking coexistence and compromise. Hamas is seeking conquest and taking over. And by the way, Israel, the destruction of the state of Israel is not Hamas' final destination. Mm-hmm. Hamas' final destination is building the Islamic Khilafah, which means an Islamic state on the rubble of every other civilization.
And one more quote from this son of a Hamas leader, now a Christian, Mossab Hassan Youssef, in a CNN interview with Don Lemon, clip number 15.
They were preparing us from the age as young as 5 years old. This is the ideology that Hamas was feeding us. And honestly, it's impossible almost for anybody to break through and see the truth of and real face of Hamas and be able to leave at some point. As you see in my case, I had to lose everything just to say no to Hamas. And today when I look at the children of Gaza and I know what they are fed, I know that they have no choice.
Yes, and I'm just reading from a report here, July 27th, on the Allgemeiner Journal, support for Hamas waning. Gazan journalist says most Gazans hate Hamas. All indicators seem to point to waning support for Hamas in the Gazan Strip, or the Gaza Strip, with details in this report. Maybe we'll post it for you to read a little bit later. All right, I want to interact with a British journalist in a moment, and I want to take your calls as well. So stay right here, 866-34-TRUTH, but we're only taking calls of those who differ. Thanks.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
The average age is 17. That means that about 250,000 are under 10. And you know, if you know any 10-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 4-year-olds, the idea in the looseness of a war zone that you can control your children, that they won't be somewhere where they can be hit, is, you know, beyond any kind of imagination. You can't hope to control that. So that in a very densely packed urban area, if you decide to throw missiles, shells, and the rest, then undoubtedly you will kill children. And that is what they're doing.
Ah, that was the voice of Jon Snow, face of Channel 4 News in England since 1989. He had recently visited Gaza, shocked, overwhelmed by what he saw, especially the suffering of the children. Who wouldn't be? Who wouldn't be shocked and overwhelmed and pained by that? Jon Snow had tweeted out July 20th, if you strangle a people, deny them supply for years, extreme action is inevitable. The one begets the other. Actually, the blockade is the result of Hamas violence, not the cause of it. But here's what I struggle with. You'll see, we'll play a couple more clips where Jon Snow is blatantly not looking at this in an equal, unbiased way. All of Gaza does not have to be a war zone. Who required Hamas to attack Israel, number one? When Gaza was returned to Palestinian control, and by the way, when it had been under Egyptian control, the Egyptians did not do anything to enhance the standard of living and the well-being of the Palestinians living there. When Israel said, okay, it's not our best security interest to keep trying to govern the land there, they had about 8,000 Jews living there. Those people were displaced physically. It was a violent upheaval within Israel. This happened almost 10 years ago, roughly 10 years ago. It was a terribly emotional time for Israelis to physically drag out Jews from where they'd been living. But they had developed the land, they had developed greenhouses, they had buildings. What did Palestinian leadership do to those? Destroyed them. Israel thought, okay, here's at least a jump start. Let us leave you what we have been working on for years and years and years. It's a good source of income and so on. No, those get demolished and destroyed. A beautiful synagogue demolished and destroyed. In fact, there are reports that some of the concrete and steel from that were used then to build terror tunnels. This is what we're dealing with. So with all respect to Jon Snow's compassion, which we all share, all of Gaza doesn't have to be a war zone. You don't have to be shooting rockets from schoolyards or commandeer a hospital and shoot from there or have an entrance to a terror tunnel under someone's home. No one's requiring you to attack Israel, number one, and thousands of bombs over a period of years. And number two, why do it from civilian areas? If Israel's going to fight back or fire back or try to take out people trying to kill them, you're endangering the population, right? Let's go to clip number 11.
Now, of course, Hamas, for its part, was throwing rockets into Israel, designed, ideally, as they would put it, to kill Israelis. But, of course, Israel, courtesy of American finance, has invented the most brilliant shield, which is keeping absolutely everything out. And that's a big difference.
Oh. Those villainous, miserable Israelis, so brilliant that they constructed the Iron dome defense system to keep missiles out. It's just not fair. People are trying to kill you, and you devise a defense system, and with the help of American money, America's guilty, America's complicit too, in Israel's self-defense. So it's not fair. It's just, who told Hamas to try to kill Israeli civilians? Who told Hamas to infiltrate, say, a kibbutz or infiltrate another area, a settlement somewhere, and slice the throats of little children, including infants, and kill a whole family in cold blood, except ones that weren't there, and then celebrate it? Who told Hamas to do that? And for the Israelis who were killed today, which of those missiles did the Iron Dome keep out? And for the people of Sderot, who border on Gaza, who've had to live for years within 15 seconds of a bomb shelter where people have been killed and where Israeli children have been traumatized, perhaps for life, without help, growing up under constant assault and fire. I guess the Iron Dome, that villainous Iron Dome, wasn't around. And I mean, what kind of moral equation is this? It's very troubling. Clip number 12.
So when I last spoke to the Norwegian doctor, who is one of those dealing with the consequences of this bombing, I asked him how many children have been wounded. They've registered 1,310. How many children dead? 166. But that number is growing all the time. That is what makes this something that every one of us has to confront. We have to know that in some way we actually share some responsibility for those deaths. Because for us, it is no priority whatever to stop it. Our United Nations, our government, our world is not that interested.
Again, the casualties, shocking, horrific, mind-boggling, agonizing, terrible. I don't know if Jon Snow has reported on the 160 Palestinian children, Gazan children, who, according to Hamas authorities, as reported in the Journal of Palestine Studies, said that the 160 children died in the building of the terror tunnels. God knows if that number is even a fraction of being accurate. Why not an outcry over that? But let me say this in all seriousness. I'm speaking now as a non-journalist, yes, a biblical scholar and professor and radio host, but as a non-journalist, I'm speaking to an experienced journalist. So with all deference and respect to Mr. Snow, perhaps if it was simply realized at the beginning that Hamas is fighting this war, knowing it has no possibility of winning, but its goal is a war in the media to make Israel look bad by killing its women and children. If you know that, then there is a way to report, to put the blame squarely on them, and not to facilitate more anger in the Muslim riots in London and other cities. Perhaps then, the people of Gaza would be able to say no to Hamas leadership more quickly, and Israel would be able to live in peace with their neighbors. Perhaps, sir, there's more complicity on the media than you realize. All right, we are out of time, but I'm switching subjects in the second hour, but there's so much more to cover. I'm still going to take calls and still discuss this in the next hour. So those that want to keep listening, go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and just click on the banner to keep listening online. Otherwise, catch it later today on our website by clicking Latest Audio. And be sure to take advantage of a wonderful resource. We'll be telling you more about it as the week goes on. A tremendous resource put out by David Kyle Foster and his ministry, Former Homosexual, Extraordinary Story. This tells the stories of many others who've come out of homosexuality, opens up what Scripture says, deals with the principal objections. And when you order the DVD, we're giving you a free DVD of my debate with Rabbi Shmuley about homosexual activism. Here's the number to call, 1-800-278-9978. Just $20 for both, by the way, postage paid. 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, let us awaken to reality. If you really care about the children of Gaza, then Hamas must be removed from power. Boy, I have never seen so much misunderstanding about issues of religious discrimination. We've got to set the record straight today, right here.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, we just had a very intense eye-opening hour with some very powerful audio clips we interacted with talking about Israel and Hamas. The latest word from the Middle East is that earlier today, fire from Gaza killed 4 Israelis and seriously wounded others. A house hit directly. Again, whoever Hamas can kill, civilians, men, women, children, as a victory for them and their cause. Israel then sent word that there's going to be massive retaliation. What did they do? They told civilians living in several areas, get out, get out, get out. Go to the area of Gaza City because they were going to be bombing. That is the latest news. But if you want perspective, please go to my website, AskDrBrown.org. Later today, click on latest audio. We'll also have an important YouTube video up. And if you're not connected with us, connect via Facebook or Twitter or YouTube. Just super easy. Even if you're not computer savvy, if you can find your way to AskDrBrown, AskDrBrown.org, and just click on the different icons, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, you see it on the upper right. You'll get subscribed. You'll get connected. And you'll be edified and blessed and challenged and equipped every day, every night. Now, I only took calls in the first hour from those who differed with me on the issue of Israel, Zionism. I will still take calls this second hour, all right? But that is not going to be my main focus. However, if you differ with me on LGBT issues, on issues of religious discrimination, I say that gay activism is the greatest threat to freedom of religion, speech, and conscience in America. If you differ with me on any of those positions, if you are in favor of the executive order that our president signed into law 1 week ago, then the phone lines are open to you. So I'm only taking calls from those who differ with me today, 866-34-TRUTH, either on Israel and Zionism and the war with Hamas, or on gay and lesbian-related issues. My friend David Benham sent me a copy of a tweet that he received yesterday. Oh, where is it here? Let me find it. Here we go. This was the Misfit Tweets. That was their name. Writing to David Benham. Oh, and to Charisma Magazine as well, warning them. Be careful with Dr. Brown. You lie down with dogs. You get up with fleas. Well, funnily enough, and of course, David and I got a great kick out of that, but funnily enough, Scott Volk, my dear friend and colleague, if you were with us in our tour in Israel, he helped lead the tour, actually was the primary person with me out there every day. So this is 1967 Borders tweeting to Scott Volk, you may have an Arab wife. His wife, Beth, is Lebanese, full-blooded Lebanese Arab. You may have an Arab wife, but you are a protege of Michael Brown and an avowed Zionist. You are a hypocrite to say you love Arabs. So I posted one of those on my personal page and one on our fan page, just some of the love that we get standing as we do. And these were sent to me with smiles by my friends Scott Volk and David Benham. So I guess you should beware of listening to a dangerous guy like me. After all, you would not want to become one of my protégés, would you? We'll be right back.
Send it, Lord.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us, friends. I've got a lot of really interesting things to discuss with you as far as religious discrimination, gay and lesbian discrimination, the president's recent executive order, where we should stand as believers. And if you differ with me on any of that, the phone lines are open. If you agree with me, sorry, but I'm not taking your call today. I only want to hear from those who differ. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. It's a major reason we have talk radio. And look, trust me, I'm a debater. I love to interact with people. I had this happen the other day. I posted something on Facebook, and folks started responding, critics, and I did not have the time to interact. You said, well, interact with everyone. Okay, just on our Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page last week, as it continues to grow in activity, just on that page, not all the other places where our articles and materials are out, there were about 52,000 comments posted, all right? So I don't see the vast majority of them, nor does my team get to see everything that's posted. But I was looking at things that were blatantly wrong and easily refuted, and I was praying. I said, God, what do I do? I'd like to correct this, but it's not my place now. And it would be an abuse of my time in terms of other things I need to do. So others have to join in. But that's a major reason that we pay for airtime, is so that we can interact with those who differ with us and have a conversation, even if it's a spirited conversation. We'll have a conversation. So in a little while, we're switching gears to just America and these religious discrimination, gay, lesbian discrimination issues. But right now, we're going to stay with Israel. I have taken issue with journalists. I've taken issue now with a prominent journalist in England, Jon Snow. I applaud his compassion for suffering children and others in Gaza and other areas. Who could not have a broken heart seeing the terrible results of this war, Hamas's attack on Israel and Israel's response? But I've taken issue and said that there is complicity in the media when there is a stoking of anti-Israel sentiment, which is exactly what Hamas is looking for. It's the only reason, or the primary reason, they wage this war, because they know they're not going to defeat Israel. That's obvious. So listen to this from Paris, clip number 18.
There is a strong feeling inside the French Jewish community that it's time to leave.
The mother in this Jewish family has already been called a dirty Jew by the neighbors. She's instructed her daughter how to slip her Star of David inside her blouse when she goes outside, and has told her sons to be careful about when they wear their kippahs. France's Arab and Muslim citizens have staged large and more violent demonstrations, including one in which 200 Jews were trapped inside a synagogue.
I mean, you have to realize how terrifying this is, given the history of European anti-Semitism, given the violence, given the rising tide of even radical Islam within France, something that France has to deal with, just as France put aside Israel. And notice that all Jews are somehow responsible. All Jews are somehow guilty, even though many Jews are not even that strongly Zionistic. They are now all guilty. And that's why you'll hear the Hitler phrases and back to the ovens and kill the Jews, because there's often a fine line between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism. But listen to this, and this is what I want you to hear when I talk about media complicity. Listen to clip number 19.
Jews do blame the French media for the rise in anti-Semitism because of the way it attacks Israel on a daily basis.
The media have been inciting against Israel and the Jews for more than a decade.
We are fed up with the image of Israel that is continuously repeating itself.
When you watch TV, when you listen to the radio, or when you read newspapers, you always feel hate message against Israel.
All right, so let's just think about this. You have the history of anti-Semitism in Europe to start, a lot of it the fault of the professing church. Then you have the large presence of Muslims in France and England and their hostility towards Israel and the Jewish people. Then you have the media reporting in such a way as if Israel is the evil bully beating up on innocent men, women, and children. you have all this together. You have ingredients for disaster. You have ingredients for riot. You have ingredients for violence against Jews. I mean, there was Jews specifically targeted in France just because he was Jewish. They found his picture, found who he was, and beat him up. And many would like to take it far beyond beating someone up. There is media complicity, especially when you realize, to repeat, and this was known by analysts from day one, that Hamas did not start a war with Israel, kidnap and murder Israeli teenagers in cold blood, and then start launching rockets into Israel after there had been relative calm before that. They did not do it thinking they were going to win a war or battle. They did it thinking that they could win in the war of public opinion, make Israel look bad, make Hamas look good. And to the extent the media is complicit with that, then the media has to do some real soul searching and ask, are there even more casualties because of their reporting? Israel's not guiltless. Israel's not perfect. Israel needs to be held to a high standard of justice that they espouse. And by the way, read the Israeli code of ethics. Read what the soldiers are trained in. Read even now how they were trained before going into Gaza. And remember, I'll repeat this, if Israel wanted to inflict damage on civilians, they could wipe out Gaza overnight. And the reason that Israel is losing its own young men in battle and they're dying, dozens of Israeli soldiers now have died in the conflict. The reason that's happening is because to take out these tunnels in other areas, they need to get in themselves. Otherwise, if they just bomb them out, too many civilians will be killed. So Israelis die to preserve the life of civilians. Those are facts. The media needs to do some real soul searching here. All right. 866-34-TRUTH. I've had my say. To the phones, Dina. Oh, come on, Dina. I was ready to talk to you next. All right. I guess that's not going to happen. Let me just finish up on the Israel subject here. And let's go to clips 21 to 23. Let's listen to an Israeli spokesman and leader, Danny Ayalon, what he has to say about Operation Protective Edge. Again, we'll start with clip number 21. Thank you, Dennis.
In 2005, Israel completely withdrew from Gaza in the hope that it would bring peace. The response? 12,800 rockets and thousands of mortar shells at civilian populations in Israel. Hamas has turned Gaza into a launching pad and tunnel worn, attacking Israeli schools, hospitals, airports, and shopping malls. How should Israel respond proportionally? Fire 12,800 missiles indiscriminately at the people of Gaza?
Yeah, this is history. This is history. All right, let's go to the next clip with Danny Ayalon.
According to Geneva Conventions, Hamas is responsible for the civilian casualties as they deliberately place their civilians at risk. Hamas has created stronghold in mosques, hospitals, schools, and homes, using their civilians as human shields. Hamas is exploiting their dead.
It's very sad, but true. And by the way, when you hear reports, you know, well, look, when ambulances are trying to come into Israel, they get stopped at checkpoint. Why? Because sometimes they've had suicide bombers. They've had bombs. That's why. Otherwise, it is Israeli policy. Israeli policy that if there is a medical need, as soon as they verify it, a woman in labor, as soon as they verify it, they bring that person to the front. You say, but why the checkpoint? Because people were infiltrating to murder them, to murder their children and their women and their men. Would you put a gate up in front of your house? Would you put a gate up in front of your house if your neighbor's dogs were continually sent across the street? They were vicious dogs to attack and kill your children. Would you put a fence up? And if that fence also inconvenienced your neighbor, whose fault would it be? Last clip with Danny Ayalon giving some of the history, relevant history of Gaza.
Some argue that Israel's response has been disproportionate because of the disparity between the few number of deaths on the Israeli side versus those on the Palestinian side. But there can be no proportionality in war. Good must overcome evil. more German citizens died in World War II than American and British together. But there is no argument that it was because of the German heinous aggression, not the British or the Americans.
Yes, very, very important point. Just simple truth. All right, we come back. Oh, I've got some powerful clips to play for you from a brand new DVD I want to tell you about. And then I'm going to talk to you about this whole issue of religious discrimination. Are we crazy? Are we making this up? Or are we just afraid? We're afraid of gay people? We're making up because they're evil gay people? No, no, no. We care about equality for everyone. The question is, what does that look like? How does it work itself out? Stay tuned.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast, 866-34-TRUTH. All right, there's been a lot of response to a video that we put up. If you want to see the videos, go to AskDrBrown.org and click on Latest Video. Or just subscribe to our YouTube videos. Free subscription, of course, like everything I imagine on YouTube, but ours certainly is. And every time a new video is up, you'll know it. These are getting thousands and thousands and thousands of views, which means they're hitting a nerve or meeting a need. And again, if you differ with me on anything that I'm about to say, or you know my position in advance, 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call. This is on our dime, our airtime. I want to hear your dissenting views, and I want our listeners to hear. Last week, I did a whole interview with a Palestinian Christian, Reverend Alex Awad. I agreed with him on certain key points of our unity in the Lord, differed with his understanding of the history of the conflict and the current situation, but felt it was very important that you heard his perspective. And he wrote to me afterwards, appreciative of the fact he was able to get it out. In other words, he was satisfied that I gave him a real opportunity to get his position out. That's on our dime. Why? Because we're eager to have honest discussion. We're eager to have honest discussion, especially between believers on hot-button issues. But whether you believe in God or the Bible or consider yourself a Christian or you simply differ with me, either way, 866-34-TRUTH. But I explained that the president's executive order was actually an executive order against religion. It was an act of discrimination in the name of anti-discrimination. And people have disputed that left and right. They've disputed that very, very heavily on our different social media platforms and in other places. And this has been the basic argument. Religion does not have a right to discriminate. And if you want federal money, you can't discriminate. My point was, this has nothing to do with discrimination against people. It has to do with the ability to have religious freedom. So let's just break this down again, all right? We'll give you a semi-hypothetical. The thing happened, but I'm wondering what would happen now after this executive order. Remember, a wide ranging group of religious leaders, some of whom have been close to President Obama, some of whom campaigned for President Obama, they all wrote to him and said, please put in a religious exemption clause here to protect religious groups. Why? Because you're talking about millions and millions and millions of people who deal with the federal government, and you're dealing with many organizations that the federal government grants funds to because they recognize the importance of the work they're doing to help the poor, humanitarian work. So they give them funding. So here's my semi-hypothetical. This actually happened. The hypothetical is, what would happen after this executive order signed by our president? I recently preached in a church, a substantial church here in America, thousands of members. And they, for years, have been on the front lines, not just of gospel outreach in terms of sharing the message of Jesus, but gospel outreach in terms of helping the poor, the needy, helping those struggling with addictions and other issues in their lives. The city in which this church is based received a large grant from the federal government several hundreds of thousands of dollars. And this was to help the community in terms of meeting physical needs, feeding the poor, housing, whatever it was. They turned around and said to the church, here's the money. You use it because you have been doing this for years. Now, this was not to be used, say, to support a missionary overseas. This was not to be used for a church building project. This was to be used exclusively for meeting physical needs of the people. The church looked at it, worked out a program for the money to go directly to that goal. Okay. Great use of federal funds. Here are people doing it, and there's not going to be a lot of red tape and bureaucracy, and there are going to be a lot of volunteers, so this money is going to go a long way. Well, based on this executive order, could this church now be told, because you receive federal funds, even though you use those funds exactly as designated, could this church be told now on your staff you are required to hire a practicing homosexual, even if that violates your moral stand? You are required to now do that. Or you are required to employ in your nursery a cross-dressing man who's in the early stages of sex change conversion. And he hasn't even started his hormones yet, but he's just getting accustomed to living like this to see if he's comfortable. You are now required to hire that transgender-identified person because you receive federal funds. If so, that is discrimination against religion, because the religious group needs to be free to hold to its moral standards. And these are historic moral standards that Americans have held to through the centuries, that the founding fathers would have held to, and that are clearly based on scripture. So if, in fact, they would be told now, because you receive federal funding, if you want to receive any more federal funding, you now must comply by these laws and violate your own beliefs, that is discrimination against religion, plain and simple. All right. Powerful DVD out. I want to go to clip number 2. Let's listen to this first, and then I'll tell you about this DVD, why it's important, and how you can get it. Clip number 2.
I was safer around women, and I liked to be around girls, and all of my friends were girls. I didn't have anyone helping me navigate this world of being male.
When puberty kicked in, all of these desires that I had, wanting an in-depth and very intense relationship with the little boys, actually became sexualized.
Many teenagers that grapple with this secretly have a great deal of hopelessness. They believe that they were born this way, there's nothing they can do about it, and they're often hesitant to talk about it. The truth is that they weren't born that way, and that change is possible.
Ah, parents, are you dealing with this in your own family? When your kids have said, Mom, Dad, I'm gay, or I think I'm gay. You're dealing with it with friends, colleagues, maybe struggling in your own life trying to sort this out. What does the Bible say? And what do psychologists and psychiatrists say? And are there really testimonies who have come out and are changed? Is that it really happened? They've left homosexuality behind? Look, this is a great question on a practical level in the family. But churches, you're dealing with this. Pastors, you're dealing with individuals. How do I answer these questions? We get asked constantly, how do I answer? How do I respond? Well, there's now one DVD put out by David Kyle Foster's ministry. It's called Such Were Some of You. And we're offering the DVD. When you get it, we will give you free with it my debate with Rabbi Shmuley Boteach, Is Homosexuality America's Greatest Moral Crisis? I think this debate will blow you away as well. We'll give you that on DVD for free. So the two DVDs, just $20 postage paid. So anyone dealing with this in your own family, anyone dealing with this in church ministry, I mean, every church should have this. Every counselor should have this. Concerned parents should have it. Teachers should have it. Young people, older people, those working through apologetics issues, just a great tool. So get it. I'm on it as well, by the way. So I had the joy of participating. You get the debate with Rabbi Shmuley for free as well. Call now, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. Once more, 1-800-278-9978. Or if it's more convenient, just go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, right on the homepage.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. We have had quite a first 90 minutes on the broadcast today. 866-34-TRUTH from Hamas, Israel. The conflict, a very painful conflict, terrible loss of life. And I say that especially with regard to the many Palestinian casualties as well as the Israeli casualties, so you don't have the very, very false impression that, to me, Jewish blood is more valuable than Arab blood. Let me be plain. Jesus died for Jew and Arab alike. There is a great harvest taking place in the Muslim world today. And I'm looking forward to interacting with more Palestinian Christians and others so that we can dialogue and share different perspectives for the help of you, our listeners. I've put out prayer calls for Hamas terrorists. I have put out prayer calls for the Palestinians living under Hamas, saying they are the real and ultimate victims, as well as prayer calls, of course, for my own blood family, Israel, and I believe with clear prophetic destiny for Israel and for other nations in the Middle East. But we've been talking about the issue of religious discrimination. We've been talking about the issue of LGBT issues and how sexual freedoms interface with religious freedoms. And I want to read something that I posted last night. Let me just scroll down and find this. Because I see this happen all the time. Here's what I wrote. I've noticed something ironic over the years. Many of those who criticize my writings on LGBT issues point out that my PhD is in Near Eastern Languages and Literatures, and my scholarly training is in the Bible and Jewish studies, not human sexuality. Of course, as an academic, I've learned how to do serious research and how to work through sources critically, so it's not hard to work in other fields as well. But the irony is this: the same people who say, don't listen to Brown when he talks about homosexuality since he doesn't have proper academic qualifications, are the ones who say, don't listen to Brown when he talks about the Bible and ancient languages. He's just a bigot. Yep, I run into that all the time. I write this with a smile, of course, and with a feeling of sadness for these critics. As for my writings regarding homosexuality, that's why I footnote things so carefully. Everything is backed up by careful research, and in the end, despite criticism and mockery, truth will triumph. So, on with it. Now, here's what's fascinating. Again, so you understand, people say, well, your PhD, fine, your PhD in Semitic languages, ancient Near Eastern languages, and biblical studies. I mean, that's your field of scholarship. So why should we listen to you when you talk outside of that area? Oh, okay. So you respect my scholarship within that area, and you listen to what I have to say about the Bible and homosexuality and what the Hebrew means and the Greek means, because those are my fields of academic training. No, you're just a bigot. Why should we listen to you? So that's really the deeper issue. People are simply not going to listen and find an excuse not to listen. But here's the truth. Not only did I do extensive research in the relevant areas, but I spoke with many experts. I interacted with many experts. I quote experts. And you say, yeah, but those experts are wrong. In other words, the problem is not the research. The problem is not the level of expertise. The problem is whether I'm affirming a position you agree with. That's the real issue. Because you'll find, if you find fault with me, then you'll find fault with the sources that I cite. Now here's another question. What degree, Matt, maybe you can help me with this. What degree do I need to document whether there is a disproportionate gay presence in the sitcoms? Is there like a sitcom PhD, PhD in sitcoms? What degree do you need to see gay activist propaganda talking points coming through TV drama and movies day and night? How about a degree in common sense? How about a degree in open your eyes and look around? We'll be right back.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast. I want to play another clip from this DVD that I mentioned. I mean, after all, if we talk about civil rights issues, if homosexuality is not innate and it's not immutable, in other words, if people were not born that way, and if change is possible, no one's denying that the desires may be very, very deep-rooted. No one's denying the fact that it may be very difficult for some to actually change. But if in fact people are not born that way in the sense that someone is born black or born white, and if sexual desires, romantic attractions do change, I mean, more and more people are talking about sexual fluidity. I please hear me. I'm not saying just change. That's like telling me, okay, be short. I'm just about 6'3". Someone telling me, just be short. Or someone telling me, from here on, you have to do everything as a lefty, not as a righty. No, you can't just snap your finger and do that. Now, I do know people who have, by the power of God, been dramatically, supernaturally delivered from homosexual desires, and they found themselves changed. I even was sent a testimony by a friend of a friend. She wanted me to know what happened to her friend, that he came to the Lord. He was a practicing homosexual. He came to faith, and he thought, you know, all the heterosexual guys I know, they've got so many lust issues. All these heterosexual guys, they struggle with looking at other women and thinking fantasy thoughts about other women all the time. Why do I want that? So he said, God, give me desire for the woman you want me to marry. And God brought him to a woman. He fell in love. He was sexually and romantically attracted to her, and he wasn't attracted to other women. And according to the report, this person knew them for years, and they were blessed in their marriage. I mean, God can do all kinds of things. But if it is wrong to say gay is the new black, then you can't look at it as a civil rights issue. It's so different in many, many ways. Many, many a time, African-American callers have lit up my phone lines protesting the idea that gay is the new black or that gay is the new civil rights movement, and for many right reasons. Now, does that give us the right to be abusive to someone who identifies as LGBT? God forbid. Does that give us the right to treat them meanly? God forbid. Does that give us the right to bully, to speak hatefully, to demean? God forbid. Especially if we call ourselves followers of Jesus, people need to know about the love of God through us. That does not mean, however, that we cannot practice our faith. That does not mean, however, that the government can coerce us to violate our beliefs. That does not mean that the government has the right to tell us you are not allowed to hold to your convictions or live them out. You say, yeah, but you're stopping us from getting married. No, we're saying that marriage is the union of a man and woman, and that we don't recognize something other than that as marriage. Any more than if I told you, and again, I'm not comparing the two, just making a point. Anywhere, if I told you as a gay person, well, I'm marrying a dog or a fish, you'd say that's not marriage. Again, I'm not comparing them. I understand you have companionship and friendship and intimacy and loyalty and you share life together. I understand that. We're talking human versus human animal. I understand it. But marriage is man-woman. Marriage is the union of a man and woman by definition, by history, by purpose. And if it's just the union of two people, then why two? There is no logical reason to keep it to two. And ultimately, there's not even a reason to keep it within humans. And I say this fully understanding that you may be listening as a committed gay couple. You may be raising kids. You may be really nice people. And in fact, my latest article, Universalism is Next for the Soft Love Crowd, addresses that very issue. So to get background, if you've missed any of this, go to my website, askdrbrown.org, click on latest video, and watch the video. We play a clip from President Obama, and I respond, President Obama signs religious discrimination into law, all right? And then click on latest article. Hopefully I can even get to some of that before the show is out. But back to the possibility of transformation. Dennis, let's go to clip number 3. This is from an exciting new resource we have for you called Such Were Some of You. We'll tell you how you can get it in a moment. Clip number three.
Before we can be attracted to the opposite sex, we first need to understand and be completely comfortable in our own gender and be comfortable with who we are. And so little boys need plenty of time bonding with other boys before they can become attracted to girls.
So much of identification with the same sex occurs in the context of play and bonding with other little boys in a troop bonding, it's called.
So he looks to the boys to give him a sense of who he is as a male. He wonders, am I going to fit in with them? Are they going to accept me? Will I be a part of their group?
And I had an extra step in coming into troop bonding, which actually didn't happen for me until I was in the gay lifestyle.
Ah, now that's their story. That may not be your story. But that may be the story of your kid, or your cousin, or your neighbor, or someone in your church. Now, I want to take a couple more minutes. Dennis, we'll go to clip number four next. And I want you to hear what happens in someone's life when they encounter the Lord, someone who identified as gay, homosexual, same-sex attracted. I want you to hear out of their own words the testimony from a young man, clip number four, and this is from the new DVD, Such Were Some of You. It is getting rave reviews.
And I walk up to the altar on this side of the altar, and I lift up what all I have, and I just started to say, Jesus, 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 because I didn't know how to pray. So I'm just like, Jesus, 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 Jesus. I need you. I need you to come. And it was like liquid love came over my head, my heart, my stomach, my mind, my heart, and my soul. And in the Spirit of the Living God that morning delivered me and set me free from homosexuality. I remember being plastered on the floor in a snot, crying mess, just under the presence of God, and the mom praying mamas, they're laying hands and they're, you know, praying so hard, they're spitting on me and they're, you know, covering me up with those like butt covers for, you know, that they make at the church so that you don't show anything. And I'm just encountering the Lord, and I've got snot on my cheekbone, and I'm just like, you know, face down encountering Jesus. And it was like the most holy experience I've ever been in. And it was where I really felt loved and I really felt accepted. And it was better than any high that I could ever have. It was better than any relationship that they could ever give me. It was better than ever being drunk. And I'm just spending time with the Lord. And he's encountering, but I knew that when I left that place, I was left with the decision of who I was going to choose.
Oh boy. Now you say, well, that's not my story. All right, tell you what if I believe your story and you believe his story? How's that? What if I say, okay, maybe you struggled, maybe you went to a church service, maybe you prayed and nothing happened, maybe you went to counseling, nothing happened, maybe you were depressed over the efforts to change and that's why you've now said, hey, this is who I am and I fully embrace a gay identity. Okay, I believe your story. Will you believe his story? And here's the question. For pastors, churches, leaders, I was part of what was called the Jesus People Movement or the Jesus Revolution. I got saved in 71 as a heroin-shooting, LSD-using, hippie rock drummer, 16-year-old rebel. And I was one of God knows how many tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of hippies, radicals, rebels that were getting saved, not all around America only, but all around the world, dramatically saved, born again, transformed. And churches, in many cases, were not ready. We came flooding in, but in many cases, churches weren't ready. There were not new wineskins for the new wine. There were very few spiritual fathers for all these radical new believers who really wanted to give their lives for Jesus and do anything for the gospel. There was very little discipleship. And so some made it and are going on with the Lord today, but many didn't. I and others have been feeling for years that there's going to be a great outpouring of the love of God and the salvation of God in the homosexual community. Those who identify as LGBT, and they're going to be coming to our churches. And some of them are not going to be quite sanctified yet, and some of them are not going to be sanctified overnight in terms of their lifestyle. And some are going to break a lot of our preconceptions, like a man wearing a dress, holding a Bible with hands raised, praising the Lord. What do you do? Are you ready for the harvest? Well, this DVD will really help you. Prepare your heart. And then it'll give you something to look forward to. So for those struggling, family members struggling, churches that want to be equipped, here's how you get the DVD. We've packaged it together with my debate with Rabbi Shmuley, is homosexual activism or homosexuality the greatest threat to America today? You'll find it a real eye-opening debate between Rabbi Shmuley and me. You get that free, that DVD. So the two DVDs, just $20, postage paid. Call now to order, and you can order multiple copies if you like. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Once more, that's 1-800-278-9978. Or, as always, go to my website. It is the resource offer right on the homepage. Go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. When we come back, I'll explain why I say universalism is next for what I'm calling the soft love crowd.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH. Boy, I got one more clip from that DVD. I'll play it in a minute. But I wrote an article, and you can read it by going to askdrbrown.org and clicking on latest article. It's called Universalism is Next for the Soft Love Crowd. Oh, I also posted another article over the weekend. I'm going to do this really, really quickly, all right? The article is called Who Said It's Some Amazing Flip-Flops on Same-Sex So-Called Marriage. So who said this? I remain opposed to same-sex marriage. I believe marriage is an institution for the union of a man and a woman. This has been my long-standing position. It is not being reviewed or reconsidered. Who said that, actually? That was President Clinton, 1996. Now a strong proponent of redefining marriage. Isn't that interesting? And that interview was with The Advocate, which was a gay activist publication, meaning that he absolutely, if there was any place where he should have toned it down, it would have been there as a politician, but he was that blatant about it. And then I have in the article a Hillary Clinton quote, but I spotted a more powerful one since. This is, well, I'm telling you first, Hillary Clinton, 2000, and she's now a strong proponent of redefining marriage. Marriage has got historic, religious, and moral content that goes back to the beginning of time. And I think a marriage is, as a marriage has always been, between a man and a woman. That was Hillary Clinton in 2000. What do you know? And then Senator Joe Biden, then, when he was running as vice president or for vice president with President Obama, he was asked a question in a debate, do you support gay marriage? He said, no. Barack Obama nor I, so he left out neither, Barack Obama nor I support redefining from a civil side what constitutes marriage. We do not support that. And then President Obama on MTV, I mean, that's very gay, pro-leaning, gay activist, in its shows and so on. I don't think gay activists are unhappy with MTV programming. Conservative Christians would be from many angles. This is what he said. I believe marriage is between a man and a woman. I'm not in favor of gay marriage. It was 2008, our president. Now he's pushing it harder than any major elected official in history. Anyway, so you can read that article too by clicking on latest article. But in my article today, Universalism is Next for the Soft Love Crowd, I note that Demi Lovato, I'm not familiar with her, but apparently well-known celebrity singer, I guess. I note that she's the latest professing Christian and celebrity to declare that, quote, the loving God that I believe in would never condemn anyone for loving another human of the same sex. So I ask, what's the next step on the slippery theological slope? The answer, the next step will be, the loving God that I believe in would never condemn anyone, period. Yeah. So we know that one of the greatest strengths of the, quote, gay Christian movement is that there are lots of really nice people who are same-sex attracted. Some of them profess deep faith in Jesus and are active in compassionate and sacrificial service to the poor and needy. How could a loving God condemn people like them? And to me, that's a very powerful question. I agonize over it, but I also agonize over religious Jews, especially religious Jews that I know that they pray to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and are some of the finest people I know. Is God going to condemn them to hell? And you may have an atheist family member that's a terrific person as human beings go. God going to condemn them? Or remember, most Muslims are not suicide bombers. What about the sweet, devoted Muslim mom or dad? Or God going to condemn them? And it's that same logic that will open the door to universalism. And I cite specific examples of people who are on that path or already there. All right, one more clip from the new DVD, and that is called Such Were Some of You. We had David Kyle Foster as a guest on a few weeks ago, and we have all been waiting for this DVD to come out. I'm on it as well. Let's listen to clip number 5.
Temptation isn't sin. It's what we do with the temptation that determines if it's sin or not.
I don't allow myself to be in association to things that would feed my former way of thinking.
Go back to the throne of grace. Go back to the mercy seat and say, Jesus, I need you. Rule and reign over me so that I don't think those thoughts anymore.
The grace of God is amazing, is so powerful. It actually gives us the ability to say no to sin. I love what the scripture says in Titus 2. It instructs us to deny all ungodliness and to live righteously in this present life, not in the by and by. God's grace isn't just some kind of a spiritual veil between you and Him so you can continue to live in sin.
Ah, boy, how refreshing to hear those voices. Such were some of you. That's what Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 6:11, speaking of all types of people who had been transformed by God's grace and who had been forgiven and who had been put in the column of saved, righteous, sanctified, set apart to God, children of God through faith in Jesus who granted them repentance. The DVD, Such Were Some of You. So we deal with what Scripture says. I'm on it. Professor Robert Gagnon, a colleague and the foremost authority on the Bible and homosexual practice. You might say to me, Mike, haven't you specialized in that? Oh, not the way Professor Gagnon is. He's the number one in that field. So he's on it. You have Christian psychologists, psychiatrists offering their expert perspective. And then you hear from people who have come out of homosexuality, not just one or two, people transformed, people living for God, people happily married to the opposite sex and serving God for years. So it's just available now. We were sent some sample copies within the last couple of weeks and now just have it ready to offer to you, our listening audience. But always we try to make our resource packages attractive to you so that you'll be blessed by them. So when you order it with postage, it's a $20 value, but we're giving you free my debate with Rabbi Shmuley Boteach that took place at Southern Evangelical Seminary in the greater Charlotte area a couple years back. Is homosexuality America's greatest moral crisis? Now, I answered that by saying, no, lack of consciousness of God is the greatest moral crisis, but homosexual activism is the greatest threat to our religious freedom, our freedom of speech and conscience. And just the opening presentation was a pretty, what can I say, eye-opening itself. That DVD is free. So you save a good amount getting these together, and we hope they'll be a blessing to you. We know they will be. We're confident they will be. 1-800-278-9978. If you can help with a larger gift or become a monthly supporter, even better. But let's get this out to as many as possible. You can order multiple copies for friends. 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today: let us practice our faith freely, without restraint, without constraint. If we don't practice it freely now, we can't blame the government for putting restrictions on us later.